Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
It's Laurie and John.
We both wish you, and of course, our dear Hezzy, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. All the best and in good health, that's for sure.
Oh, yes.
Well,
and
I'm so excited.
And to all our listeners.
I missed you guys, but I am thrilled. I remember when you did a review of the CTV series about two years ago. I was just like enthralled because now, my God, it's bigger and better than ever before.
Well, enthralled is
you've got a heck of a memory.
Yeah.
I don't remember from week to week.
Well, no, that's my problem too. But I don't like to point it out. But it is a reality I live with. However, what's really exciting,
but you know,
John,
people get it all wrong.
Oh,
people get it all wrong,
okay.
Hezzy. Yeah, when people say, I keep forgetting, I don't remember the way I used to, what people need to realize, or at least this is my philosophy, is that by the time we reach the exalted age that we've reached, which is far better than being the alternative, right?
Dead.
Okay, so by the time we have 6 feet under, by the time we reach this exalted age, we have amassed so much information and experience that our cup runneth over. So if we can't recall something immediately or even ever, it's because we are so filled with information and stuff like that. So this is why.
Well, I want you to know that I can appreciate your dissertation there, but I got to share this just between us three. And that is because we've got the Yonkers Tribune website. Well, the world, well, I don't know how much of the world is listening, but actually I hear a lot. But the bottom line is when I put it into the website and put your article up, I said, you know, let me just check here because, you know, I remember we did a few Cadillac reviews that you guys did, and there it showed up. So it's not because I'm so smart and I remember. Actually, I've forgotten a lot. But I still
listeners,
know how to look
ignore
it up.
Listeners, ignore everything he just said. He really did recall from 2 years ago. I mean, I recall my 50th birthday party, and that was more than 2 years ago. So anyway.
Was it?
What I want to say is.
I can't believe that.
3 years, three or four at least. But
I remember that. I remember that too. I remember that too, Edith, although I wasn't there.
Now, I'm going to something that has never been heard of before.
Right here, on radio.
First time on radio.
You're not
going to
display anything, are you?
No, what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce my husband, and then I'm going to shut up. This is a first.
Oh, my God.
No kidding. You want to write that one down?
This is a revelation.
You do want to remember. Yeah.
This needs to be written in blood.
Mine.
Yes,
likely.
So here's my exalted, John. Here's my exalted introduction about an exalted Cadillac, and here it is. So we get this Cadillac, and Johnny's going to tell you all about it.
Eggshell blue.
Well, before
Robin
you say,
egg
Johnny, you're butting into my introduction.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
exactly.
So
driving me crazy.
So this really blue car pulls up, and Johnny pulled over this thing so much so that I really never drove it. So instead of me
you
telling...
You tell him why you never drove it?
Because you always drove it.
No, that's not
it's
it.
Exactly true.
No.
And because you hate it when I drive and you're a passenger. So, but here's the thing.
Did you even get in the car?
Would you please let me do my introduction? You're talking about impeding upon my brilliance here. So
watch me impede.
But here's the thing.
Well, that's a salient point, Laurie. Very, very salient. For those of us who know what
gosh.
It means.
Oh, my gosh. Who knows what salient means? Well, I'm going to continue, despite all this clutter in
okay.
feedback here. But here's the thing. Show after show, time after time, when we've talked about sports coupes and cars that have a real racing element to them, we've said things like, I don't understand this. Why is the car company, you know, trying to marry a sports car with something else? What's the point? And we've never really been won over, but this Cadillac was the exception. We also have commented how difficult it is sometimes to get in and out of a sports car, how difficult it is to drive a sports car, how noisy a sports car can be.
If you're over 50.
Especially a hybrid sports car. But this Cadillac defies all expectations, and because of that, Johnny was all over this incredible Cadillac, and it is a sports car. It is definitely a sports car. He'll tell you why, but it's the first car that we've reviewed together in the 10 years we've been doing this together that has really been something that won him over and that he would buy for himself. It just broke all barriers. So with that, I introduce you to my beloved husband.
Now that you've stolen all my thunder.
Johnny. Go for it, John. Here's Johnny. All right. Hezzy, Johnny, here you go. I'm
on
mute
now. I can hear the applause.
I can hear
the...
All right. Take it away, Johnny.
Well, I know that you read the article that I wrote for the Yonkers Tribune, and the truth is, when I wrote that, and I started with, I've never used the words Cadillac and sports car in the same sentence, and that's really, this is so different. You talked about the CT4 series that we did a couple of years ago. This is nothing like anything, any of the Cadillacs that I have driven before. And it talks about Cadillac's racing heritage, which I didn't look into. But this, and they call it a sports sedan. But this is much closer to a sports car than it is to a racing car. And it is a sedan, has four doors, and actually had plenty of room in the back seat for, you know, two more people. So, but it's long. It's like long and not that wide. So it doesn't look like a race car. That's the point about why I think it's more of a sports car. They call it a sports sedan. Well, and it has all these racing things. And I'll talk about the engine and all the safety stuff and all. But you have to see this thing. And I put in the website. But the website doesn't even do the car justice, because it's a very subtle race car look to it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just subtle. I'm telling you, it's really captivating. We had the really, really light blue, like Robin's Egg blue in the sports model with everything on it. With the Blackbird, it's called, which is the high engine, all the racing things. And it had this black spoiler on the back and a wind spoiler, a black wind spoiler, on the front, which is part of the fiberglass package. And so you've got this sports car look to this, really light blue, black front and back, and it just looks like, kind of like a... I don't know, a sports car, a race car. It's kind of a combination of those things. And then when you get in it, it's got those, now this is the only thing about the car I didn't particularly care for, but it's got those bucket seats with the hard sides on the bottom.
Yeah.
So when you're getting in and out, if you don't have any butt, and I don't have any butt, so it really makes an impression on you when you get in and out. But once you're in, it's sort of like the cockpit concept. You are literally buckled in, and everything is in front of you or right around you. So you have complete control of the car. Let me just say at this point, I'll talk about some of the features that it had, but it had all the luxury features that you expect in a Cadillac, number one, and I'll talk about this later. So you've got all these wonderful things, and then you start it up, and it's got this V6. Hold on, I'll tell you exactly how many. But it's a twin turbo, and it's got that roar to it of like the muscle cars that you remember. Mm-hmm. It's got a 3.6-liter twin-turbo V6. And the normal one is a six-speed, a manual six-speed. Ours came with the 10-speed automatic, which is an extra. The 10-speed automatic comes on the CT4s, but on the CT4 Blackbird, that's mm-hmm. an option. So we had it. Oh. Well, this thing has 472 horsepower. Wow. And it's top speed on the track, and you can tune this car. That's another thing, like we talked about. Remember we talked about the Chevy, not Camaro, but the new one that they made. Anyway, you could tune it for the track. You know, it changes mm-hmm. the certain dynamic. It's the same on the Cadillac. You can mm-hmm. adjust this thing for track speed, for traction, for RPMs. I mean, you need a manual, or you need to really be very understanding of engines and stuff to do all that. But mm-hmm. here's the point. This car will do 189 miles an hour on the racetrack.
Really?
Well, first of all, yeah, where are you going to drive a car 189 miles an hour? But we're talking about a Cadillac sedan that will do 189 miles an hour. And I will tell you, and I won't tell you where, but there's a very long straight stretch, about 2 miles long, where occasionally I take these kinds of cars out and sort of open them up to see if they will respond and do these things that they're supposed to do, because there's not many places mm-hmm. you can drive a car very fast. But this one with that 10-speed, and now it was a rolling start. I was already going. But I stepped down on it, and it was the smoothest transition from gear to gear. And when I looked down, I was flying. Now, I mean literally flying. It was absolutely stunning, and it really, you felt like it was hugging the road. It had all of those things you would expect in a race car, and I just was incredibly, incredibly impressed with the vehicle. Okay, that's all about the engine and the racing and some of those kinds of things. But it's a Cadillac. Do you know what it has on it? It has seat massagers. Both the passenger and the driver have built-in seat massage. And when you turn it on and you set it up, it comes on every time you start the car. You don't have to do it every. It stays on until you turn it off. Seat massagers in a sports car. Who other than Cadillac thinks of these kinds of things? Do you know what I mean? And then, of course, it had the leather seats, bucket seats, you know, leather. And then it had heated seats, air-conditioned seats, heated mm-hmm. steering, everything you could think of that you would normally find in a Cadillac from a luxury standpoint are in this, literally, in this race car, in this sports sedan that is... Mm. It was just the coolest car. So one of the things that when I was talking about this, I said, well, who would buy this car? You know, I talk about all that sort of thing. And then I get to the end of it, and I said, well, I'd buy it. I mean, this is for anybody who, in your heart, most of us grown men, in our hearts, envision ourselves as Paul Newman in the race cars. It's just, absolutely. You know, part of the fantasy of life, you know, that you want to do mm-hmm. those kinds of things. And here's the car that makes you look good in it. Do you know what I mean? It's the kind of car that you can see yourself doing these kinds of things. And now let's add an element of realism to this, too. The CT4 itself is, I think, starts around $38,000. The CT4 Blackwing, which is this model, the racing model kind of thing, it starts at $58,000, which is not bad for a Cadillac, especially for one that's got all these things we talked about. But then you add all of the options, like the 10-speed and all of some of these other things that I've talked about on here. But, I mean, it had every option you could have. And you had all the options, and it's up to $75,000. So it's not cheap. And you think, well,
yeah,
gosh,
but I gotta
who
ask,
would
you
want
know, to... we always talk about money, but the truth is there is no other vehicle, based on your review, that comes even close to what this car does.
No,
how
correct.
How can you put a cost on that? Because don't people also want, who can afford, not everyone can afford a $75,000 car, but those that can appreciate it because that's what they want. But you didn't have that option before.
Well, and it's sort of like people who can afford it buy a Lamborghini or people who can
exactly.
afford it buy a Porsche. Well, people who likely like luxury cars, and this is so unique, at least to me, in the Cadillac line, that this is like buying the first year of the Corvette. Do you know what I mean? Mm. If you had a 66 Corvette or a 67 Corvette
right.
or Stingray or that kind, think of what you have now if you own one of those and kept it all these years. Well, this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, technology changes, so that's not going to be true of this particular vehicle. But I'm telling you, this is so unique. It is a wonderful vehicle, and it has such – well, I'll tell you the little things. It's got the seat – it's got power seats, okay? It's got power seats. And you can set the seats, driver one, driver two, driver three, okay? You can set it, adjust it, now it's your seat. Then it also has the leg extender. You know, in the front of the seat where you can actually move the front part of the seat out to accommodate your legs? And we've talked about it in the past, how so many of the foreign cars, they seem to be made for shorter people, and so the end of the seat is under your leg. Well, and how great it was to have cars that had this ability that you could move something underneath your knees, right at your knees, and it gave you a lot more support and control. Well, that has this. This is, and you expect that on a Cadillac. Don't misunderstand. But you don't expect it on a Cadillac sports sedan. You know what you see?
Right.
You see what I mean? It's
This
one had heads-up display. A heads-up display is something you would normally have on a sports car or on a race car. Why? Because you don't want to be looking down at things. So the heads-up display on that puts what it is that you need to know right below your eye line of vision as you're looking out the windshield. That's perfect. Well, you can get that on a Cadillac, and it's great, but it's not something that's necessary for a big luxury car, although it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on a sports car, which is where you would expect it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like somebody did a lot of really impressive thinking about what makes a race car or a sports car special, and how can we marry that idea with the luxury of the Cadillac? They did a good job. I mean, they've done a really good job. Other things, like you got the 12-inch display, you know, and navigation, easy, hooking your phone up. See, all the typical things you would have on a luxury car are also on this CT4 Blackwing. And it's just, I don't know, I really enjoyed it. It's one of those cars, it's just unique enough that it really appealed to my senses as a young at heart car enthusiast. And then it also appealed to my age-wise love of the comfort of a vehicle if I'm going to be riding in it for any particular length of time. So, there's another thing. It had the magnetic, my words fail me when I need them, but the, has he helped me? What controls it? Shock. Magnetic shock absorbers.
Uh-huh.
Magnetic ride control. That's the name. Magnetic ride control, which uses the newest technology to give you that smooth ride. Because you know when you're in a sports car or you're in a race car, you're very close to the ground, okay? And then unless your wheelbase is really wide and the car's really long, you feel a lot of the road. Well, this one is not terribly wide. It's not very wide for a sedan. And it's got all this aerodynamic things to make it low to the ground. So how do you offset the ride that would normally be rough, picking up every little pebble in the road? You do it with this magnetic ride control that adjusts as you're driving. And, of course, it's doing it on a kind of instantaneous. It says 1,000 times per second it's reading the road. 1,000 times per second, okay, and trying to keep you level and smooth. And it works. It really, really worked. What a marriage of racing technology and comfort. Who's it for? I don't know anybody that likes that kind of thing. And so I think especially with the Cadillac name, it really broadens the base. I think for the younger people who are, we used to call them yuppies, upwardly mobile, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think for people who are, and are now finding their stride, many of them, who are not going to offices, who are working from home, who have, who are making good money, and who enjoy time away from their work. Is this the kind of car that young people, 30s and their 40s, would enjoy? Absolutely. Could you carry your kids in it? Yes, you could. Does it have the safety features that you would want and expect in a Cadillac? Yes, it does. It automatic braking. It's monitoring what's in front of you, pedestrians. It's monitoring what's in back of you if you're backing up. It has automatic backups. It'll stop you. If you're backing up and something comes, it'll stop you itself. All the airbags, of course, but all of the technology, lane keep assist, anything you can think of that we always talk about in these vehicles, it's got it. Plus, and this is what really blew me away, ours I don't think had it on there, but this 2022 CT4 also comes with hands-free driving. You can literally push the button.
That in your review.
Yep.
You mentioned
you
that.
You literally can push a button and it will drive itself on roads that are set up to handle that kind of thing, which I think is a neat little caveat they put on. We see a lot of commercials now with people driving trucks and cars and they're, you know, they take their hands off the car driving itself. But you have to remember the road has to be set up so that the car has certain things that it's referring to make it, to allow it to drive itself. But anyway, the technology is on this CT4, which I thought was really, really cool. Do I want a race car that's driving itself? No. But if I'm, you know, if I'm on the right road and just going somewhere, that'd be cool. It's out there. The technology we keep talking about is coming, I think, is here.
Well, you know what I find interesting about this is it's a Cadillac, and I think there were times where I didn't think that Cadillac was building to its highest capacity, but this vehicle shows that they're on a different trajectory, and they're not going to lose the race with their innovation, and I think they include the innovation and it shows, and I think that's very smart because in the past the foreign makes didn't have any way to separate themselves from the rest of the industry and they were always looking for something innovative, but I think that Cadillac has really done a superb job. I'm very proud of the American engineering that's come about in the last 5 years because I was not happy with it before.
Yeah.
We were failing.
Well, I think the mental, and again, if you're looking from a top-down approach to things, you know, the American way was, well, gosh, we've already built these cars. We built them this way. This is what people wanted. We're not changing. And then along comes the foreign manufacturers who said, what do Americans really want? And started experimenting with that, started getting some traction. And now look at Genesis. Look at some of these other, what's the Toyota? The
Genesis is unbelievable. unbelievable. Well, then, I just saw a recent model. I was in shock how gorgeous it was.
Well, and what did and Toyota built? Which one did Toyota build? The high
Lexus.
End. Lexus.
The Lexus.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So just think about that. Here are these foreign manufacturers who say, "Well, what do they really want? Hey, let's try this." And all of a sudden, people are buying their cars. And the Americans, I think,
right.
kept saying, "Well, we've always done it this way. This is what people really want. We'll just keep doing this. We'll do. Oh, we'll make a few changes. We'll do this." Well,
it sounds very British. It says like, "I've made my decision. I don't care.
Yes, exactly.
I've made my decision, and it's all over."
Yeah, it is.
Well,
because all of a sudden,
British,
they're not.
I love the British.
But they're not. But all of a sudden, the American manufacturers are not selling cars. Hey, the name
right.
of the game here is bottom line profits. I don't care what anybody says
yeah.
about any of this
mm-hmm.
stuff. You want to know what's going on? Money. You know, so for American
yeah.
car manufacturers, you're either going to make money or you're going to go under. And there's some you can name.
Well, you know, I guess you've heard about this. General Motors, the entire operation for the first time has not been the number one seller in the United States. Our home market, and Toyota took
wow.
over the number one helm after 90
yep.
some odd years.
Yeah.
You know how
there
frightening that is?
Yeah, I know. No, I'm with
but
you.
Here Cadillac is, you know, holding up the banner, and I hope that it resonates with people. It'll take a few years, I think, for people to come back to the American product line. But they're becoming much more innovative.
Do you remember, and this is a little off topic, but do you remember, like, gosh, it's been 50 years ago now, has he, but the that the Toyota,
that.
I'm pretty sure it was, they came out with total quality management. There was the philosophy
yep.
called quality management. And
mm-hmm.
and total quality management says that the people at the top say, we're not going to produce something that isn't perfect. And what
yeah.
happens is that the guy on the bottom then says, whatever I'm going to give to the next guy in line has to be absolutely correct. And so he
yeah.
makes his part absolutely correct and then hands it to the next guy. And the next guy
mm-hmm.
says, I'm going to do my part on this, and when I give it to the next guy, it's going to be perfect. And so it
mm-hmm.
starts at the top, the decision-making, but at the bottom, every person signs on to, listen, I'm going to do the best that I can do. And if there's something wrong, if my equipment's not right, you have to provide me new equipment. And top management says, I'll get you whatever you need to make it work. You have to make it work. You get me the equipment, I'll make it work. And the truth is, everybody generally goes to work with the idea, I want to do a good job. And so if you believe that, which is what the Japanese taught, you know, that I'll give you the right things to make whatever it is we need to make. It's your job to make it. And people bought into it. And total quality management became a watchword in all of the products that many of the Asian companies used to manufacture their products, especially things like
mm-hmm.
vehicles. And you hardly ever even heard about that in American manufacturing. But look
mm-hmm.
now, go back to what you just said about Toyota. What has it done? Little by little, by making a better product and making it. Do you add a lot of expense when you ask the guy that you're already paying to do something to simply do it perfectly? And he says, well, it's going to cost a little more if you get this equipment. All right? You invest in the equipment. Once you've invested in the equipment, you have the equipment. The cost of it doesn't go up once you've invested in it. And you still
exactly.
got the guy who you're paying to do this kind of thing. So they tend to make quality things at less cost. And why we never have been able to see that is a little beyond my understanding. But you think about it. It's not that difficult. It's not that difficult. And, you know,
I don't
Cadillac
think it's a question of difficulty. It's a question of intent. And people said, well, you know, this is the way we've been doing it. This is how
yes.
our consumers are used to it, and they'll accept
right.
it from us. And there was also a nationalism that has dissipated quite a bit, and that's
yes.
everywhere. But we've lost that drive for, you know, America, and And remember the old saying, we don't buy American, it's bye-bye America. And maybe that's a reality that's setting in.
Because our time is up.
No, it isn't.
Oh, my God.
It is 10:30. And I'm here to tell you that.
Gosh, I wasn't done. I had to have everything to say.
And you're right, Hezzy. If you don't buy America, American, bye-bye America. And on that note, Happy New Year, one and all.
Oh,
bye, America. Get a Cadillac. Love Hezzy.
Oh,
love my husband.
Right. Talk to you next week. We'll let you know.
Week.
Thank
Happy
you, buddy.
New Year, one and all.
Bye.
Take care. Be well. Bye. How lovely. It's always great to talk to Johnny and Lori. Lori and Johnny. The last name is Wiles. You got to read the review. It's about the, sorry, I'm losing my mind. It's the 2022 CT4 V-Series Cadillac Blackwing. You'll be really quite impressed. And even though the technology is there, I've got to admit to you, I think I would be scared out of my mind to press a button. And even though the roads were designed to be able to maintain a car in its lane and to do what it needed to do to drive with a machine, you know, at the helm, I think I would still be a little bit scared. But, you know, maybe that's the old me talking. And I guess I want to see the technology at work. So before you know it, I'm sure that both John and Lori are going to be getting a car that they will be able to press a button on. And then the question is, well, you know, are we going to need to have reviewers, automotive reviewers, which they excel at? And it would be a very, very interesting transition because the cars are transitioning. But I wonder if the human standard is transitioning in droves as we expect or the industry hopes we would evolve to. And that will be very, very fascinating, to say the least. Well, we're supposed to speak to Cam Edwards. He's the editor of BearingArms.com. He's the host of a popular podcast called Cam and Company. And the show focuses on Second Amendment news and information. And he speaks over how people may protect their Second Amendment. So with all due respect and apology to him, somehow or another, I thought I had his contact number. And I realized almost at the last minute, literally about a minute or two before the broadcast began, that I hadn't entered his phone because I was going to give him a call. And unfortunately, when I looked for the number, it was too late to get his number from another source. But I did email him in the hope that he will get it in time to call us back. So, well, the other thing that you might want to know is you could get information about what he does and the organization that he works at in order to protect the Second Amendment rights is SAF, like S like sugar, A like apple, F like Frank.org, which stands for Second Amendment Foundation. .org. And so who knows, I'll be talking to you for a moment in the hope that he will eventually call us. He may not, because he may just not have the number for whatever reason. And I have had some difficulty on my cell phone. I have no idea what the cause of it is, but I have to really check, and I haven't had the time to check. Only because, you know, I'm not that mobile and I keep forgetting because it's so busy at, you know, the news and writing editorials and stuff like that. It is so time consuming and it seems non-ending. But we read a great deal, so it becomes important to be able to function on that level. You can't drop the ball. Because you're busy. busy means that you best be busy responding to our readers, and that's and those are the ones we serve. And we try to cover a panoply of issues and a panoply of political dogma in order to be able to point out to people that there may not be only one issue, one concern, one manner by which to make a judgment call. And because not everyone, including myself, are so astute on every subject matter and every issue, and we don't always appreciate the differences among us. Just like there may be a difference between you and your spouse, there are still relationships that eclipse those differences. And yet in the political realm today, we find that we don't have an interest, or we maintain our perspective and position because of a lack of knowledge. And somehow or another, we have a major divide. The divisiveness in our nation is becoming palpable to such an extent that it actually undermines, I think, our capacity to move forward. And there should be a manner by which we can move in lockstep with one another, no matter how we divide and no matter how disparate we may be from one another, culturally, ethnically, gender-wise, religiously, where we live as opposed to places, other places where other people live, and so on and so forth. We don't engage in conversation, unfortunately, that permits us to supplant our ignorance or our lack of knowledge. Doesn't mean that you're ignorant of anything. It just means that we haven't had the discourse that's required in order to inform us, not necessarily cause us to be appeased by our knowledge, but to be aware that there are other aspects of knowledge and definition of self and definition of others by what we hear and what we do. And quite often we get people who believe that their opinion is a fact, and the fact is not always opinion, and opinion is not always fact. We need to tie these into who they are, define them for what they are, and separate the two or three or four or five definitions that may exist on any opinion or position, whether it be scientific or non-scientific, whether it be political dogma or not, just so many issues. We've got to come back together again as a nation because we are hurting. We're hurting on many, many different levels because we don't respect each other's perspective. And to finger point at one another because of our lack of knowledge or our lack of living the lives that other people live, to no fault of their own or to, and certainly not because of their ignorance, because they're not ignorant. We all somehow conform to our environment, wherever that happens to be. We conform in so many ways, and yet we have come to a point in our political realm under which we live that has now created a schism that divides us. And we don't have the people at the helm who can bring us forward together with awareness, knowledge, fact, and opinion, and all those things that matter. We need an explanation of why people believe in one thing or another. And that's what, in a sense, is so interesting about, Cam Edwards and BearingArms.com and, the Cam and Company broadcast and also the Second Amendment Foundation. Because I think a lot of people on the East Coast and probably on the West Coast don't always necessarily know why these people believe, why they believe, what they believe. And we are too quick to demonize and denigrate and undermine in any way that we see fit, because we don't know who they are, why they think the way they do, why their sensibilities have been molded by circumstance. That doesn't make them bad. It doesn't make them negative. It makes them aware of their circumstance. And don't we all somehow capitulate to our environment one way or the other? Where do we learn? Who do we learn from? Where are our sources of knowledge? Have we moved away from our religion? Does that matter? For some it does, for others it doesn't. Do we believe in the Lord, whoever and whomever you define him or her as, drives our ignorance? And what is it that drives our intellect? What is it that drives our passion, and what is it that diminishes it? Where and how are we going to move forward, and can we move in lockstep? And where did we go awry, and what is it that brought us to this point? And I'm not going to be the one to finger point at anyone, because at the end of the day, whether some people want to hear it or not, we're all responsible for where we are today. And the divisiveness in our country on every conceivable line of divide, every conceivable division that we can concoct seems to be, at the highest level to undermine who we are and what we do. It is really outrageous. I don't know how much longer we can continue like this, because we're at each other's throats. I've learned one thing in my ignorance or in my brilliance, no matter how you want to define me. I've learned that there is value, credibility, an essence of truth, and an essence of lack of truth in every perspective. And that's why I cling to learn at every juncture. And I have found that from every individual, the simplest to the most complex, there is something to learn. There is something to know. And without being aware and without being thirsty to learn, we will be in our cocoon of ignorance, and we need to come out. The metamorphosis that we need to evolve from that cocoon to become the butterfly that we all can be if we want to be, if we challenge ourselves to be, exists. But we don't want to die within the cocoon. We need to go through that metamorphosis. We need to become the chrysalis into where we will create the beauty that we all seek and the respect for one another that we all seek. We need to teach each other what we don't know from one another. And it's just, I remember the day, I'm old enough to remember, and thankfully still remember, so my intellect seems to still be intact. But you never know. There are moments at my age where there are times I even realize, my God, it's taking me too long to recognize the word that I'm hunting for, and I don't recollect what it is. English is not my first language. It's way, way down the line. So I think it's the last language I ever learned, of seven, no less. So it's number seven for me. That's supposed to be a lucky number in my world. But the thing is that because I suffered quite a few heart attacks, I've had three in my life, and triple bypass and all kinds of other stuff. But the good Lord is keeping me here, I guess, for a reason, and I'm very thankful for that. And I think at this point in my life, at the end of January, will be my 72nd birthday. And so The point is I'm being kept here, but I realize there are times where the vocabulary, and that has a lot to do with the heart attacks, because I think it wiped out my vocabulary. I remember the good old days when the words just came fluently, without a problem, without a hesitation. I do find that today for some crazy reason, because I'm not used to English names or American names, I quite often stumble as I try to remember people. I know who they are. I can visualize them, but I forget their names. You know, so simple names like Brian or Keith or Ray or Mary or Jane, whatever, just doesn't come through. I mean, I can give you different names, but sometimes I just can't recollect these people. And I'm sitting there for like about 3 or 4 or 5 or even 10 seconds and say, who is that person that I know? So there are moments like that. Maybe it's a question of age, but I think it has a lot to do with the lack of oxygen in many parts of the brain. And I realized the last heart attack was about less than a year ago. And I didn't think it had affected me for a while. I guess I didn't realize it. But then I would not nod back and forth, but there were times when I would think of a word, couldn't look it up because I didn't know what I was trying to look up. You know, there is no dictionary that contemplates and is able to recognize what my mind is thinking, even though my mind didn't tell me what I was thinking about. Literally, you sit there for a minute or 5 minutes or even 15 minutes, even a half an hour, and eventually, somehow or another, the vocabulary came back. And it's as if the mind had locked all these words and the vocabulary in my inner mind, and somehow by trying to think of something, it dislodged it from whatever lock or a place that it was locked in. So it was like in a safe, and it was kept safe until I was able to recollect them. I remember even at one time thinking about a concept. The concept was there, and I didn't know exactly the meaning of what the concept was, because there was one word. I don't remember the word now, but I remember the circumstance, and I wrote the sentence, and then I looked at the sentence, and I said to myself, what does that word mean? I was in shock that I wrote something and I didn't know what it meant. So, but naturally, you know, it was certainly on the internet. I didn't have to have a dictionary by my side. And on the internet, you get the latest words, the latest vocabulary. It's all updated with a lot more information than you could even in a dictionary, because the dictionaries are now online. And so I looked up the word, and I was floored to realize that that word was exactly the word I needed to complete the essence and meaning of that sentence. Can you imagine the suppleness of the mind to be able to recognize something that I was not even aware of what I was doing consciously, and yet the mind put it down, and I was able to spell it. I was always good at spelling. In fact, the only thing that messes me up is the spell checker, because sometimes I look at it and I said, "This is not the way I spell it. It's not the way it's supposed to be." And then sometimes I find out that there's more than one spelling, but I'm used to one spelling. And then because I didn't learn English in America first, I learned it from I did really learn it from Columbia English speaker who spoke with an English accent. So I think he was a graduate from Columbia, but he was a teacher in the UK, and I learned from him. And so he was my teacher. And sometimes I misspell because I'm spelling the English way as opposed to the American way. And there are sometimes differences. So we've got to remember that. But I'm pretty good that way. And I can also pick up, this is the beauty of learning, is I can also pick up the language of people. And I could sometimes hear where they learned their language by the idiosyncratic manners by which they give expression to their ideas and concepts. Can't always be 100% right, but I get a sense that they're not an American speaker, and sometimes I have to catch myself and say, "Ugh, this is not even English. The grammar is wrong because I didn't learn English first." And I speak a few languages where the grammar is completely different, and so it's in juxtaposition to English. And so it's very fascinating. And then people tell me also that my sentences are too complex, which is very interesting as well. But that also comes from the grammatical structure from which my first two languages were learned. And so I think you can train the mind, because evidently that I recognize that by language, you can train the mind to be able to comprehend the complexity of a long sentence, whereas in American English, I find that the sentences are shorter, more succinct, and possibly easier for a particular manner of speech. Not that it's less complex, it's just that this is the manner of the syntax, and this is the way people give expression to their thoughts. And sometimes I go on, it seems like it's a run-on sentence, and then when I write, I tend to write in run-on sentences, and then I have to go back and then say, oh my God, this is not English grammar. This is going beyond where it should. And then I could find that the complexity of a sentence can be such that it can also be broken down into pieces that do not change the meaning and the complexity of the thought, but actually put a pause between the different aspects of the construction of those long-winded sentences that are not conducive to the American speaker, the American English speaker. So very, very fascinating. Many, many things to learn, to say the least. Well, I can't believe I've been talking to you since 10:30, and it's now about 10:53. So evidently our caller is not calling because I don't have his number. He doesn't have my number. So hopefully we can reschedule because I want to hear what Mr. Cam, I guess the Cam is short for Cameron. I only know one other person whose name is Cameron. He's a friend. He's the son of a friend of mine that goes back many, many years that I met here in the United States from the town of Greenberg. And so love him, love his wife, and love Cam, their son, who's just a wonderful, wonderful kid, great education, very impressive. And but now he's a young adult, so I guess I've aged, so he must be now in his late 20s, I would think, mid to late 20s. So, recently married, so I understand. So he's certainly way over 18, that's for sure. So I guess memory serves, even though I am so bad at dates and times. You asked me a question of what happened, just like we were talking with John and Lori before. I didn't remember anything about the 2020 CT4 V-Series Cadillac, not the black wing John gave notice of today, but rather I didn't remember it. But I knew that we did a Cadillac, and I looked it up, and there it was. So go figure. So hopefully we'll be able to reschedule Cam, probably Cameron Edwards. the editor of daringarms.com. If you want to learn about him on your own, there's also the Second Amendment Foundation, the SAF.org. So you could learn about some of his concepts there. And I wanted to talk to him and come to an understanding of what informed his sensibilities to gravitate toward the Second Amendment Foundation. And I think there is a disconnect somehow in the United States, because I was born in a country where everybody has an Uzi submachine gun, and you could find it in every home. The women have the training to use an Uzi submachine gun. The men do as well. The women do not go to war, should there be a war, rarely, because we're concerned about their physical safety and being sexually abused. God forbid they get caught. So they run the show. You know, the men do what they're ordered to do by the people who are in command, and the women are in command. So a great deal of respect for their intellect, their capacity, their compassion, their awareness, and just the fact that they're really quite brilliant and on the same level. And yet there's still, of course, a divide between the male-female dichotomy. And there's a lot of chauvinism in Israel as well. But I guess to some extent their leanings one way and the other, and then there are others. Hard to tell how one eclipses the sexual divide at the moment. So I guess that's all under study. And so we'll see where it goes. I have no idea where it will go. It probably won't be around as it evolves in over time. I guess it was a different age in the 1800s, a different age in the 1900s, and here we are in the 21st century. So who knows where it's going to go into this century and then the next. There's just so much to talk about. Well, let me quickly look to see one more thing. Bear with me a moment here. I'm going to go to, one second, go to our website here at theyonkerstribune.com, and let me just see. Okay. I think that we're really caught up. I really do think we're caught up. So there's nothing new to speak to you about that we haven't covered yesterday or today. Bear with me one moment because I want to check to see if we've gotten any messages. There is a rumor flying about in the city of Yonkers. There may be a change. There may be a change here from in the Yonkers Board of Education. We're not quite sure yet. We'll find out, and we'll find out soon enough. But I heard a rumor all the way through till 11 o'clock last night, and the phones wouldn't stop ringing this morning either. But then we had to be on the broadcast, and that's probably what delayed me getting Cameron in. And I couldn't find his number, and by the time I signed on to the radio broadcast, it was only literally a minute before the broadcast, and I couldn't find his number. So the last thing I could do was send him an email, but evidently that didn't go through. Okay, so we'll see what goes on in Yonkers. I have no idea what's going to happen. And one second. Okay. Well, I guess that's it. Oh, this is very interesting. I had not learned about this at all. It seems that a team in Texas has come up with a COVID vaccine could be a global, are you listening to this, a global game changer. So let's hear this. A vaccine authorized in December for use in India may help solve one of the most vexing problems in global public health, and that is how to supply lower-income countries with a COVID-19 vaccine that is safe, effective, and affordable. The vaccine is called Corbivax, C-O-R-B as in Bravo, E, C-O-R-B-E, V as in Victor, A-X. So C-O-R-B-E-V-A-X. It uses old but proven vaccine technology and can be manufactured far more easily than most, if not all, of the COVID-19 vaccines in use today. Corbivax is a game changer, says Dr. Keith Martin. He's the executive director of the Consortium of Universities for Global Health in Washington, D.C. Quote, it's going to enable countries around the world, particularly low-income countries, to be able to produce these vaccines and distribute them in a way that's going to be affordable, effective, and safe. Now, the story of Corbivax begins some two decades ago. Peter Hotez, H-O-T-E-Z, and Maria Elena Botazzi were medical researchers at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., where they worked on vaccines and treatments for what are called neglected tropical diseases, such as schistosomiasis and hookworm. When a strain of coronavirus known as SARS broke out in 2003, they decided to tackle that disease. They're moving to Houston to affiliate with Baylor College of Medicine and the Texas Children's Center for Vaccine Development. They created a vaccine candidate using a protein subunit technology. And this involves using proteins from a virus or bacterium that can induce an immune response but not cause the disease. It's the same technology as the hepatitis B vaccine that's been around for decades, Hotez had said. Their SARS vaccine candidate looked promising, but then the SARS outbreak petered out. No evidence of disease, no need for a vaccine. When a new strain of coronavirus triggered the COVID-19 pandemic, Hotez and Botazzi figured they could dust off their old technology and modify it for use against COVID-19. After all, the virus causing COVID-19 and the virus causing SARS are quite similar. Hotez says they tried to interest government officials in the vaccine, but they weren't impressed. Quote, people were so fixated on innovation that nobody thought, hey, maybe we could use a low-cost, durable, easy-breezy vaccine that can vaccinate the whole world, Hotez says. Well, we, quote, we really honestly couldn't get any traction in the United States, but our mission is always to enable technologies for low- and middle-income countries' production and use, Botazzi recalls. So they turned to private philanthropies. A major donor early on was the J.P. B Foundation. That's J like Jack, P like Peter, B like boy, JPB Foundation in New York. The rest were all Texas philanthropies. The Kleberg Foundation, K-L-E-B-E-R-G Foundation. The John S. Dunn, D-U-N-N Foundation. Tito's Vodka, T-I-T-O apostrophe S, Vodka. Hotez says the M.D. Anderson Foundation also chipped in. Quote, when people say, why did we move from Washington, D.C. to Texas? Well, we knew that this was a great philanthropic environment. So this is really very much a Texas vaccine, end quote, although there were other smaller donors from all over the country. Hotez says that unlike the mRNA vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, and the viral vector vaccine from Johnson & Johnson, protein subunit vaccines like Corbivax have a track record. So he and Botazzi were relatively certain Corbivax would be safe and effective. Quote, and it's cheap. $1, $1.50 a dose, Hotez says. You're not going to get less expensive than that, end quote. Clinical trials showed they were right to be confident Corbevax would work. An unpublished study conducted in India involving 3,000 volunteers found the vaccine to be, are you sitting down for this, folks, 90% effective in preventing disease caused by the original COVID-19 virus strain, and 80% against the Delta variant. It's still being tested against Omicron. But Corbevax is already entering the real world. Last month, the vaccine received emergency use authorization from regulators in India. An Indian vaccine manufacturer called Biological, the letter E, so Biological E, LTD, is now making the vaccine. The company says it is producing 100 million doses per month and has already sold 300 million doses to the Indian government. Quote, the real beauty of the Corbevax vaccine that doctors Hotez and Botachi created is that intellectual property of this vaccine will be available to everybody, Keith Martin says. Quote, so you can get manufacturers in Senegal and South Africa and Latin America to be able to produce this particular vaccine, end quote. By contrast, the makers of Pfizer and Moderna, for example, are not sharing their recipe. One drawback to the Corbevax technology is that it can't be modified as quickly as mRNA vaccines can to adjust to new variants. And that forces public health officials to make difficult choices. Quote, something which can be adapted the fastest versus something that can be adapted relatively quickly, but then more importantly can be manufactured at a large global capacity and at a cost of production which is much lower, says Prashant Yadav, Y-A-D-A-V. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development in Washington, D.C. The thought is some protection may be better than no protection. Of course, the ideal vaccine would have both qualities, and Peter Hotez is at work trying to develop technologies that can do that. Quote, there's no issue with pushing innovation, end quote, he says. Quote, I think that's one of the really positive features of the U.S. vaccination program for COVID. The problem was it wasn't balanced with a portfolio or oldies but goodies, end quote. Hotez is hoping his oldie but goodie usher in a brighter future for the world. God, what a blessing to even have the opportunity to share that with you. I am just astounded, which is amazing. This is also very interesting with regard to health. The CDC says that a test to get out of COVID isolation is not needed, resisting pushback. Well, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is not adding a testing requirements to its isolation guidelines for people infected with COVID-19 who want to end their isolation after 5 days. I don't fully understand and appreciate that, but this is what the article says. Despite pressure from health experts who advocated for adding a testing requirement, the agency is standing by its original guidance that a negative test is not needed for people who are fever-free and whose symptoms have improved. Now, those who contracted the virus can end their isolation after 5 days while continuing to wear a well-fitting mask for an additional 5 days. So the CDC did include additional information for people who want to take a test before ending isolation, but it did not say people should get tested. Well, according to the CDC's updated guidance, the agency recommends that if an individual has access to a test and wants to test, the best approach would be to use an antigen test toward the end of their 5-day isolation period. If the test result is positive, then an infected individual should continue to isolate until day 10, according to the CDC. Well, if the test result is negative, officials said the person can end isolation, but should continue to wear a well-fitting mask around others, both at home and in public, until day 10. Well, the agency also released a brief explanation of the science behind their decision, noting that studies suggested that a small percentage of people, 25 to 30% or so, were self-isolating for a full 10 days. quote, although many people have intentions to self-isolate, both isolation and quarantine are challenging, especially in the context that many infections are asymptomatic, the CDC said. Still, the agency stressed the importance of mask wearing as modeling data showed that about 30% of people remain infectious 5 days after receiving a positive test. On Monday, the U.S. reported a record 1,082,549 new COVID-19 cases, according to data from the Johns Hopkins University, with numbers that probably include cases from the holiday weekend. The seven-day daily average for infections is hovering at around 500,000 per day. Last week, the CDC shortened the number of days a person who tests positive for COVID-19 should stay home, down from 10 days to 5, followed by another 5 days of mask wearing. While the Omicron variant is spreading quickly and has the potential to impact all facets of our society, said CDC's director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who said in a statement about the change, quote, CDC's updated recommendations for isolation and quarantine balance what we know about the spread of the virus and the protection provided by vaccination and booster doses. And these updates ensure people can safely continue their daily lives. News of the shortened isolation period prompted a backlash from public health experts who urged the agency to require a negative rapid test to end isolation. While the Biden administration, which has come under pressure for not increasing the widespread availability of at-home tests, has rolled out a plan to set up federal testing across the country. In addition, government officials say they will buy a half a billion at-home test kits and mail them out, with deliveries starting this month. Unbelievable. Well, I don't know what more we can do. I think it's inappropriate to blame the president, whether it's this president or the previous president. Hey, the bottom line is COVID has been infectious. The Delta variant was infectious. The most recent variant is also even more infectious. The Omicron is more infectious. So I don't know what people expect. You know, these are presidents of the United States. These are not doctors. We don't even have enough doctors on the front line. That's not to their fault. The bottom line is people are stressed out immeasurably. It's almost impossible to imagine how much the doctors and the nurses and the ancillary staff in hospitals are stretched to the brink. It is amazing. They don't have the rest. They don't have the mental capacity. Well, they have the mental capacity, but they don't have a way to resuscitate their mind. And they're going to work, and their hours are so long. It's so exhausting, and they're always under strain and stress. You never know. You never know who you're getting in touch with. And you don't know if people do the best they can. You know, to just do what's necessary. And that's a problem. Those are really, really big issues, that's for sure. Anyway, so that's where we are today. So we're at the end of the line. It's about 11:15. I've got to get going. Again, my apology to Cam Edwards, the editor of daringarms.com, and the Cam and Company, that where he focuses on Second Amendment news and information, and the Second Amendment Foundation.org that he's involved with as well. And hopefully he'll give us and accept our apology for my fiasco in this particular case. Don't make them all the time, but evidently I make enough. And so a sincere apology to him, and hopefully we'll be able to reschedule when it fits his timeline, and I'll make sure to have his number in hand, and because evidently I just don't have it. So all the best to you guys. Stay healthy, stay well, be respectful of one another, try to find a means to connect with people in a respectful manner. And that's about it. Enjoy the day. We'll speak to you tomorrow. You know, to be honest with you, let me quickly look because I don't remember who we have tomorrow. Let me just quickly see. Calendar. see who's on tomorrow. One second. 1 minute here. Okay. Okay, we should be. Oh, yeah, tomorrow. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to. I have to reconfirm. But I hope to get Dr. Nader Sayers. He's the New York State Assembly member representing District 90. So I expect to talk to him from 10 in the morning to 11. And then we're going to speak to Richard Thomas. He's a former mayor of the city of Mount Vernon. And we expect to talk to him from 11 o'clock to 12. So that'll be our day tomorrow. And I have their numbers, so we're not going to have the same problem that I had with Cam Edwards today. So that's our story. And we'll go back to our studio screen. And thank you for being with us, that's for sure. And most appreciative of your being with us. The reason I'm cutting it short is because there's breaking news I got yesterday. It will affect the city of Yonkers for sure. So I understand. We'll find out exactly what's going on. So I got to get back to some people and find out what I'm missing so I can keep up with the news. So all the best. Talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye. There we are.